Remembering the Reverend J.R. Manley, who died on Sunday, December 11th, WCHL is rebroadcasting his Who's Talking interview, recorded in July of 2008.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. For more than 62 years, in fact, Dr. J.R. Manley has been the pastor of the First Baptist Church, which is located right on the border of Carrboro and Chapel Hill.
Right.
And do you call yourself a Chapel Hill or Carrboro Church?
We're in Chapel Hill.
In Chapel Hill. Right. And you've lived, Dr. Manley has lived through a lot of time, and most of us who live in Chapel Hill have not been here that long and have not passed through that much history. So I visited the First Baptist Church the other day, and I didn't have this on my mind, but it must have been in the back of my mind that I could get to persuade you to come share some of the things that you've seen and learned from being here this long. Reverend J.R. Manley, it's a privilege and an honor to have you on Who's Talking.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here, Mr.
Is it possible for you to look back to that time right after World War II to 1946 when you came to Chapel Hill and tell us some of the things that were different about Chapel Hill when you got here that we wouldn't believe?
Well, the old bus station was where the Herb Holland Company is, and that's how I got here on the bus from Shaw University to the bus station. Then I had to walk from there to the Rock Hill Baptist Church, which was located on Franklin Street. And then I had to walk back, get on the bus, and go back to Raleigh, and then get away from the bus station to back to where I lived on South Robinson Street.
So no thought of driving over in a car or anything? You just
I didn't have a car.
There'd be other people riding the bus. And so you rode the bus to Chapel Hill. Was this to sort of talk about coming to work here?
I rode the bus to try out for the church.
Uh-huh.
I'll talk about that in a moment. And I rode the bus to come to meetings that the church had called me to. And I rode the bus all the while until I finally got a used car that cost about $50. And it ran sometime and sometime it didn't. Even with the car, I had to ride the bus sometimes. So the town has changed considerably since then because, you know, Mr. Herb Holland has placed a nice building there. And the old Ford Motor Company was located on the corner up there of Franklin and Columbia Street.
Wow.
So the whole town has changed dramatically. Actually, when I first came here, the Corn House was located on Franklin Street where the high school for whites were. It was located. And that's where we met when we met in our school board meetings in the Corn House. But I want to say that there are three or four words that I think describe my stay here in Chapel Hill. One is frightening.
Frightening?
Frightening. I'll explain that in a minute.
Okay.
The other is challenging. I'll explain that in a minute. The other is overwhelming. And the other is rewarding. At least those words, I think, describe some of the things I like to say about my stay here and my work with the church. It used to be Rock Hill Baptist Church. It was Rock Hill. It had been First Baptist Church, but they changed the name to Rock Hill, and we changed it back. There was some controversy about that, as you probably know.
I don't, so you. But we won't get off track now, but maybe you'll tell us about that later.
Well, right. I can, but I'll talk about it if you ask me a question about it. But it was frightening because when I first came here, in Baptist churches particularly, they have what you call a tryout. You have to try out for the pulpit.
So there's a vacancy for the minister, and the congregation, different from some churches, has pretty much absolute authority within the congregation
to call the minister. That's right. It's local autonomy, we call it. Even now, with our affiliation with the General Baptist Convention and the National Baptist Convention and the American Baptist Convention, we still recognize local autonomy, which means they come into the local church at the invitation of the officials. They just can't come into the local church. Sometimes they do by subterfuge. They go through this one and that one and the other one. And this is what happened to a certain extent when I first came here. I was given by the Board of Deacons, after that pastor left and went to the Second Baptist Church in Atlantic City, three sermons. We would like for you to come and preach this Sunday, next Sunday, and the next Sunday. And when I got to Rock Hill Baptist Church, right out of high school, really, just going to Shaw University, lo and behold, there was another minister here from Norfolk, Virginia, somebody in the congregation was making an end run on the deacon board, and they had brought another fella in. Well, I had sense enough to know that the pastor who was there was no longer there. So my need was to work with the deacon board. So the deacon said, well, we have this man here. Would you mind him preaching? Well, I had no alternative. And he preached about an hour and a half, I never shall forget his sermon, going out far enough with God to find his greatness. And the man who introduced him, who made an end run on the deacons, introduced him as well able and well capable to pastor that church. And he was the person that he thought the Lord had sent there to build the church for the building program. And I'm up there on the pulpit, hungry and tired from Shell University.
How old are you then? You're in college? Are you graduating from college?
I was just first year.
You were a freshman in college.
Freshman.
And trying out for a pastor's job in an important church in Chapel
Hill.
All right, so you're sitting there. They got you on the platform.
Oh, yes.
You're expecting to preach, but he's preaching and preaching and preaching.
That's right. And not only preaching, they're politicking and politicking and politicking, which I was completely unprepared for. I mean, actually, my family grew up in the church, and we understood the church, the home, and the school were very solid institutions for our community. But we lived a distance from our church. Our church was the First Baptist Church in Murfreesboro. We lived really in Como, North Carolina, and would travel back and forth on every certain Sunday. So my family would go to church, but they were not very active in the church. So this was news to me to find out that much politics in the church. And then they were so cool toward me. I mean, they just were excited about this fellow who was in there preaching, that trustee had introduced. And I said, now what in the world is happening? Lord, if I have to go through this, I believe I wish you'd take your call back. So I go back to Shaw University.
Well, now, did you preach that day or did you just stand?
I did not preach that day.
No. You did or didn't?
I did not.
So it was all over and they had invited you to preach, but you didn't preach.
I did not preach. That's why I said it was frightening. Huh? That's what I'm saying.
That was frightening. All right, so you went back and what happened then?
Well, I had three Sundays on it.
You came back the next Sunday.
I came back the next Sunday. And, of course, I was really still disturbed what had happened to me the first time I came, because they were making over this man, inviting him to dinner, just excited about him and excited so on and so on. And I said, here I'm standing there, left out almost like in the cold. And I said, well, I'm getting ready to take the bus back as soon as we go back. Then the deacon came to me and said, we want you to come back next Sunday. Will you come back? I said, well, I agreed to come for three Sundays, so I will come back next Sunday. So I come back the next Sunday, and I preached, I thought, a pretty good sermon. And they were just as silent as the box. They were just as silent. The other Sunday had been just all over the place. I said, well, that's what I said was frightening to me.
All right, so these two Sundays were frightening.
Two Sundays, the third Sunday.
Well, tell me about the third Sunday.
Well, the third Sunday I came back, and they were just as friendly as they were to me as they were to the man on the first Sunday.
What's happening?
Well, a young guy like myself, I couldn't figure it out. I was frightened. It was a new situation and what I was getting into, and I was sort of interested in being a pastor someplace. I wasn't sure this was the place, and I left the place just knowing this was not the place for me.
Now, that after the second Sunday, I understand. What about after the third Sunday when it was warm and you were feeling?
Well, I was unprepared for that. It was one time very cold and very hot. Everybody inviting me to the dinner and doing so and so and so and so and so. I said, now, this can't be. What in the world? Is this a church or what is this? It didn't fit in the description that I had in my mind.
Well, now, did you think that the sermon quality on that second Sunday you visited was not as good as the sermon quality on the third Sunday?
I think it was better. But they were sitting in judgment on me, and they'd already made it. When a congregation has a certain spirit about it, it's hard to crack that. It's hard to analyze it in the first place. You can feel it. Is this congregation with me, or is it not? One of the best things you can do to find out is say a little joke in the first beginning. You can determine whether the congregation is with you or not first 5 minutes. If the congregation is not with you the first 5 minutes of your sermon, you're not likely to get them with you. They're already set, and you got to do some talking.
They're thinking about something else and going on.
They got another agenda in mind altogether. Although the deacons were bringing me there to preach three sermons and to sort of introduce me to the church, there were some other people there had another agenda, and they were working their agenda, and I was caught in the middle.
How did it all work out?
Well, they said, well, now you had three Sundays, Reverend Manley, and we want you to come back the next Sunday to make up your three Sundays. I said, I can't come back next Sunday. First place, I was angry with them. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, but you got to be.
I was really upset with that crowd because I had three Sundays and they treated me, I thought, very chilly on the first Sunday.
Wow.
Very cold on the next Sunday and very hot on the third Sunday. Now, how are you going to figure that out?
I don't know, but what did you do?
Well, I went to another church I was going to preach on right across from Bennett College, all those pretty girls over there at Bennett College. And I said, goodbye, Chapel Hill, because I didn't care to come back. But then they invited me back the next Sunday, I think about 2 or 3 weeks before I could come back. And before I got a chance to come back, church had called me and said, we've called you and we want you to come and be our pastor. Want to talk about. So this was frightening to me. So that's one of the words that describe my ministry, first frightening.
But you were not so frightened that you did not accept the call.
No, actually, I might have not accepted it, except for the fact that Dr. O.S. Bullock, who was the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Raleigh, right off from Capitol there, that's the church I was going to at when I was at Shaw University, and he was my mentor. He said, don't you pay any attention to that, John. They will settle down, and you'll make them a good pastor, and I predict you'll be there a long time. And he said to me this. He said, John, the Baptist Church is one of the hardest churches in the world to start in, but it's one of the best churches to end up
in. What great advice.
That's what he said. And I said, well, I'll try it, because I was in school and doing other things, and we got started. So that was a frightening experience, as you can imagine.
Well, let's take a quick break, Dr. Manley.
All right.
I'm talking to the Reverend J.R. Manley, who's the pastor at the First Baptist Church in Chapel Hill, right on the border of Carrboro, and he's taking us back in time to how he happened to come in 1946. And we'll continue that conversation after this short break.
Remembering the Reverend J.R. Manley, who died on Sunday, December 11th, WCHL is rebroadcasting his Who's Talking interview, recorded in July of 2008. Remembering the Reverend J.R. Manley, who died on Sunday, December 11th, WCHL is rebroadcasting his Who's Talking interview, recorded in July of 2008.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is the Reverend J.R. Manley, the pastor of the First Baptist Church here in Chapel Hill. And Reverend Manley, this is a great story. You said you gave me four words to describe your experience in coming to Chapel Hill. And this is 1946, and you're a young first-year student at Shaw University in Raleigh, and you've gotten a call to come be the pastor at what is now the First Baptist Church. Well, now, what else? You have some other words that you described other than frightening or challenging.
When I got here, the church already had a building program.
Was the church located as in the same place it is now?
No, it was located right across from Johnson Strodding Ward, where the Carolina Brewery is now, right across on Franklin Street. But they had a building program, and this was rather challenging to me to be in school and to lead a congregation into a new building.
So you are going to continue in school as you continue to pastor.
Oh, yes.
Well, now, how were you able to be ordained without a little bit more education?
Well, that's the uniqueness of the Baptist Church. Any local church has the control over both the licensing of a pastor minister and the ordination of one. My church was First Baptist Church in Murfreesboro, North Carolina. I made known to the pastor there, Reverend Rousen, that I was interested in the ministry, and I had to preach a trial sermon there. And they said, okay, we license you. But being licensed is not the same as being ordained, so therefore I had to be ordained. And that was a real frightening experience. They asked questions in the front of a 300 or 400 audience. And if you messed up, you messed up big time.
Who's going to ordain you? The local church or the...
The local church is in charge of it, but they call together what they call a battery, a council, an ordaining council. And there are certain things you need to know about the doctrines of the church and about the practices of the church and about how to operate
so
a church.
That would be... And was this in Murfreesboro, or did they do that?
First Baptist Church. Yes,
sir. Yep. And so they've got, but you do have some friends and family who know you in the church, but they've got these outsiders who come in to...
They're all preachers, and they were powerful. One was the president of the General Baptist Convention, another was a very powerful fellow, and they walked in, and my family's been knowing that crowd for years and years. They walked in as if they had never seen me. And another guy, I won't call his name, was sitting beside me. And they asked him a question, and he didn't answer quite like they wanted him. And they shot him down right in front of the people. And he hadn't preached since. But he asked me a question about, did the Lord come into the room and talk to me? I said, I had it in my conscience in my heart about my call to preach. And Dr. Bishop said, and that's the way he called me too. And so then I felt free then, because they were Lord with all power. It was in their hands. That 500 or 600 membership out there was just sitting there listening. They don't do it anymore. They're taking in a room now. But back then, that's
what in front of everybody.
Everybody. And that young man who was sitting there, they scared him so badly until when they asked him, what is his name? He couldn't even remember his name. He was frightened so bad. So that was a frightening experience, too, the licensing and then the ordaining.
So you were, as a first-year student at Shaw, you're already licensed and ordained and ready
for... I was licensed but not ordained. Right. I had to go back and be ordained.
And sort of in connection with having your first church?
That's right. You couldn't pass a church without being ordained. That's a sure thing. No church would call a person and then ordain them of any rank, so to speak.
Well, you've been frightened in Murfreesboro, you've been frightened in Chapel Hill, but you're ready now to go to work and continue your studies. And how did you manage that challenge?
I've been taught all my life to work and be accountable and be responsible. The fact of the matter is, while I was at school at Shaw University, I worked at A&P store, and I worked at the film producing. They haul films from one place to the other at night. Got my classes out. I lived in the city, however, and so I had time to myself. Then I had this church. I was working all the time, so I didn't have any time to get in trouble. I had no time to get in trouble.
I guess that's a great blessing.
Yeah, it was indeed. I think so, too, because I tell you the truth. I don't mean any harm. Even then, you could get in trouble pretty easily away from home like that, so to speak. But when I was called, they said, we have a program we've been dealing with for a long time, trying to build a new church and a new parsonage. So then I said, all right then, put on a program, and we divide the church into what we call the 12 gates to the city. All the congregation was just one gate here and one gate there, three gates. And they were divided up, and they raised over $10,000 way back then. They said, how in the world? And I said, now, if you raise a certain amount of money, then we will decide to make the move. Because Dr. Bullock told me this. If you're going to build a church in the black community, you need at least a half of the money. And then you need to raise as much as you possibly can while you're building, and then carry the rest. In the white community, you can raise one-third because they get more resources. Raise a third while you're building, and then you carry a third. That's the thumb rule. So I told the congregation, you need to raise about half of this money. And we estimated it was going to be a certain thing. Mr. C.C. Craig, who was a local builder here, was the man who drew the plans. And he got an architect right on Rosemary Street to assign his name to it so that the town council would accept it. They wouldn't accept anything. We paid him $50. Isn't that something? $50 for something.
You thought that was too much probably back then.
That's exactly right. But then it was the idea of building that building. And so we built a building five or six times larger than the old building with facilities available for many programs, which I might mention if I have the time. But that was a real challenge.
Let me ask you this. In terms of you're looking at your congregation out there, I'm just guessing 50 or 60 people, or have you got 100? How many people in the congregation when you got here?
About 75.
And tell us about one or two of the people in the congregation that were special to you.
Willis Bobby, Charlie Maddox.
Tell us about
Lewis
them.
Caldwell.
These were the leaders of the church back then, and some of the people we would never have had the opportunity to know.
Well, you probably knew Hubert Robinson. Hubert Robinson was the first black alderman here in Chapel Hill. He had just joined the church from another church, who I won't mention because I don't think I need to say that. But he's very active in the community, and we made him chairman of the trustee board. Because actually, when I came to Chapel Hill, the Diggins were trustees, everything. But you need some trustees if you're going to have a building program. They couldn't, unless you're going to make all of them trustees. You had to have somebody to sign the documents, so and so. So we decided to get another trustee board and also keep a digging board. We kept some of the Diggins on the trustee board, made them diggers and trustees for a while, because otherwise the problem would be that the trustees and Diggins would be fighting each other, then you have a big problem. That's a big problem in a lot of our churches. When one leadership group decides they want to have more control and other leadership group. So Dr. Bullock told me, every now and then, bring these two boards together because they have common interests. And I do that right now. The trustees meet over here. The Diggins meet over here. The Diggins still constitute our central board. The trustees sign documents to take care of that kind of situation. But since we were already in a building program, we needed some trustees. We had to have some trustees. The first thing we had to do was to find a way to sell the property because that facility land was not large enough. And Judge Phipps, L.J. Phipps, he was the man who knew all the heirs as far back as 1865 he had on the record. And we got quick claim deeds from all those people except one who was in the armed services. And we had to deposit his amount of his share in the courthouse up here at Hillsborough. So if anything,
so it's complicated. It was air property, so it was complicated to get that.
Well,
it was complicated.
It was air property in a sense, but the record showed that our forefathers gave the Purefoys $50 for that land. However, they stipulated that it had to be used for a church. Otherwise, even though they bought it, $50 of that land paid for it back in 1865. One little acre up there, less than that. But they stipulated you have to use this land for a church, otherwise it would revert back to the heirs. So we had to get quick deeds, and Judge Phipps knew all the heirs.
Wow.
And he was the person who, he was the chairman of the deacon board at University Baptist Church, and he was also the head of the Democratic Party. He was also the lawyer for the bank. We had one bank here. And he was also the judge of the court. He was chapel here.
He was.
That's right. Whatever he said, sometimes he would just say, call down to the office, and Judge Phipps said it, and that was it. He sometimes didn't even send the papers down there for 4 or 5 months later.
Wow.
He had to be. So he was the fellow that was related to us through our membership, because whereas he was a deacon there, we had deacons at our church, and they sort of had a relationship like that. So he found the heirs and wrote the deeds, and I took them to them, and we got everyone to sign. Then we got the money from the bank that paid, bought the land. The Bank of Chapel here bought the land. And then one night we had a church conference, and Mrs. A.D. Compton, who was the city nurse, and she was going around to help people. She came to our church about 1 hour late. We had passed the budget and decided to move the church in less than an hour's time. I said, Ms. Compton, why are you so late getting here tonight? She said, I heard that you all were going to move the church, and I know you're going to be fighting here until after 12 o'clock. I said, the devil fooled you, didn't we? We're ready to go home.
We got to take a break. I'm visiting with Reverend J.R. Manley, the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Chapel Hill, and we're talking about the early days, about the challenges back in the 1940s with that church, and learning a lot about Chapel Hill history. He and I will be right back after this short break.
Remembering the Reverend J.R. Manley, who died on Sunday, December 11th, WCHL is rebroadcasting his Who's Talking interview, recorded in July of 2008. Remembering the Reverend J.R. Manley, who died on Sunday, December 11th, WCHL is rebroadcasting his Who's Talking interview, recorded in July of 2008.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Reverend J.R. Manley. Reverend, if you joined us late, Reverend Manley came to Chapel Hill in 1946 to take over what is now the First Baptist Church in Chapel Hill. And we're talking about some of these old times. You've got two words that you've talked to us a little bit about to describe your experience here, particularly early on, frightening. Right. And we talked about that, challenging. We talked some about that in the building program. What are your other?
Overwhelming.
Talk about overwhelming.
Overwhelming was when Mrs. Virginia Bobby came to me, the sister of Ted Parrish, and said that we have a real serious problem with our project on Merritt Mill Road. They were involved in developing houses.
What year are we talking about right now?
We're talking about 10 years ago. 10 years ago about that problem. I had just given up Hickory Grove. I passed the First Baptist, then I went to Hickory Grove and passed it every.
And you were doing both. You were doing both churches.
I passed the First Baptist for about 4 years. Then I started passing both churches. But Hickory Grove was just one Sunday a month. Then they went every Sunday month. We bought 33 acres of land out there, plus a new site and a whole nice building out there, that kind of thing. So I had just given that church up because it got too heavy for me every Sunday. I'd go out there, preach at First Baptist, go out there at 1 o'clock, come back at First Baptist. So I thought it was time to give it up. And I'd just given that church up, and Mrs. Virginia Bobby came to me and said, Reverend Manley, we are in trouble in Pine Knolls. I said, what's the trouble? She said, well, you know, they're taking all our land. We're trying our best to do something for the community, and now they have foreclosed on us. They owe the Bank of Chapel here, you know, CCBC, CCB, or whatever.
Now, excuse me for interrupting, but this is her house or project? This is an apartment? What is it? What is
this? This was land they had bought for the purpose of putting homes on. And they had also mortgaged their homes to take care of it.
So they were going to have a small single-family development, or were they going to build apartments?
Sure. The idea was to house people who needed homes,
okay.
Housing project.
And so this is in trouble because of some financial problems and the foreclosure.
I mean, they owed the town $100,000, and they owed CCB $100,000. And then she comes up and asks me to take it over. Now, you can imagine that was overwhelming. I'm trying to cut back.
Or you had a choice to jump in or to stay out, and you jumped in.
And I really tried to stay out, I'll be honest with you. But that's why it was overwhelming, because I really thought it was. And I asked the church, what did they think about this? And most of the time my church would say, how much is it going to cost? If it's going to cost too much, they said, well, that's not something we want to get involved in. I asked the church, would they have supported it? And they said, yes, we will. That surprised me. I said, how much would you support it? And they gave a certain figure, but a small figure compared to
what was needed.
That's exactly right. Because you got to write a grant.
What was your objective? What called you to this project?
I just told you that Mrs. Virginia Barnes.
No, I know that she did, but what was the about the not? Or maybe it was just because she's such a great lady that you wanted to help her. But what was it that y'all had in mind to do that was important enough for you to?
Well, my thing was after they went under so far and got rid of the property, to try to carry out the dream they had and so have some kind of housing project there.
Gotcha.
And the idea was to find some money. And the best thing we thought would be to go to HUD and build a project. So we have now First Baptist Manning Estate, 805 South Merritt Mill Road. And I went to Mr. Price, and he said, well, then, J.R.
This is Congressman David Price.
Congressman David Price. He said, J.R., I would encourage you, but I wouldn't get too excited, because the HUD office now is stopped loaning money because so many of these people have, these projects have failed. Time you pay the loan back plus the low interest, they fail. They will give you the money right out, but the competition is higher. And we had never asked for any kind of money, had no experience at all. And that's when we went, make a long story short, to the town, and they came in, went to the county, they came in, and Dr. Fry, was the first person to give $5,000 toward this project,
even before. Former President William Friday.
That's right.
So he was your first contribution.
And then somebody, we don't know whose name it was.
I don't think, you know, Mr. Friday, President Friday doesn't brag about this kind of stuff.
Oh, no,
I didn't know that until you told me that.
Well, he did something else, I can tell you. When I was president of the University of State Convention, he was instrumental, I think, in helping us get $1 million to put on a health program. He's very quiet about it. He would deny it. But the person that we got the money from, the first, was the head of his trustee board in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That gave me the connection between Dr. Friday. And that's the way he worked, very quietly. He came and gave a contribution, he and Ms. Friday. And then somebody, I don't know who it was, put $15,000 in the minister's office at the Presbyterian Church. And the minister didn't know who it was and put it in there for this project. So we were encouraged. Every time I tried to get out of the project, somebody would push me back in. So we have put up a project there, and we have received the first prize in North Carolina for the North Carolina Housing Project of all the projects like this in the state of North Carolina. But the reason it was overwhelming and was so rejoicing to me was that the whole community seemed to congeal around us working this. The town of Chapel Hill said, if Manley's going to get involved in this, we will suspend the foreclosure. They had foreclosure getting ready to take the property over. But then they said they will not only suspend it, they gave us money to add to the $4 million that we got from the federal government. And then the county came in, and they took care of all the fees. So we had another almost $1 million between the gifts of the community and the HUD money, and we got one of the best buildings there.
Tell us about this is on Merritt Mill, and tell us what's there and what's going on in this building that's
right
the
now,
result of this.
Well, we have it's a project of housing for the elder, the 62 and above, and that place has been filled to capacity with a waiting list ever since we opened it. And since we opened it, people, basically speaking, when it first was opened, we had people there from Orange and Chatham counties. But since it's been open, we have people from Florida, New York, California, all around the country, because they have relatives here in school or some way, and they are anxious. And when they get there, they never leave.
Well, now, we need to take a break. But before we take the break, I just say, now, when you get as old as 62, will you have any interest in moving in that? Would you be when you get to be eligible to move in, or you, would you consider
Well, you'd be eligible, but you got to go through the wait list. That's the problem. I know a lot of people. I take by this. I would love to have it here. I said, well, get on the list.
Well, we're talking to the Reverend J.R. Manley, the pastor at the First Baptist Church in Chapel Hill, and he's telling us about some of his experiences. One of the most overwhelming ones has resulted in something that's good for our town, and I think something that you are justifiably happy about and proud about.
I am. It's very rewarding. That's been my...
Just tell us the name of that project now.
First Baptist and Manly Estates.
First
name for our church and for myself.
That's great. Yeah. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll continue our conversation with the Reverend J.R. Manley.
Remembering the Reverend J.R. Manley, who died on Sunday, December 11th, WCHL is rebroadcasting his Who's Talking interview, recorded in July of 2008. Remembering the Reverend J.R. Manley, who died on Sunday, December 11th, WCHL is rebroadcasting his Who's Talking interview, recorded in July of 2008.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm visiting with the Reverend J.R. Manley, the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Chapel Hill. There's no way to cover his entire career here that began in 1946, but he's given me some insight into some of them. He talked about the frightening experience getting started, the challenges of which were illustrated by the building of the new facilities for that church soon after he got here, and then the overwhelming project that resulted in the First Baptist Manly Estates, a great facility on Merritt Mill Road, and now a very popular facility for elderly people who are younger than you and I are, Dr. Manley. But now, you had four words. What's the fourth
rewarding
word? Rewarding. Talk about rewarding.
Well, my rewarding experience has been that as a result of our relationship with many different situations, we've been able to connect with several people, one being the University Baptist Church, where they have a change of services. And we have developed a fellowship between these two churches. Almost to the extent when you see a member of the University Baptist Church, they think they're a member of First Baptist Church.
So there's this close relationship between the two churches.
We came out of University Baptist Church in 1865. And the Quakers has a hand in this too, but I don't have time to talk about that. And also, since the integration process has taken place, our community has had difficulty sustaining community because they had no central point around which to do it. Segregation was taking place. The school system was around the center of our community because everybody's child went to school, and therefore that was...
It was one of the advantages of the separate systems that you built these relationships.
That's right.
And a sense of ownership in the institutions that's hard to do these
days. That's right. But you see, you still need community. Whether you're like the Jews, when they got separated from their homeland, they established a synagogue to still have a sense of community. So what we've been doing with Lonnie Horton, who was at St. Paul Church, we exchange services on Sunday morning. In other words, we close down our service, go to St. Paul, and they'll close down their service and come to our church once a year for the express purpose of trying to redevelop.
So that those two the congregations will know each other. And
not only that, but you see there, that St. Paul is right on the line. We're on this side in Chapel Hill. But we used to go to the same building during 1865 and soon thereafter. The Quakers came here and built a school right across from St. Paul. And in that building, both churches had services. One have services on one Sunday, the other have services on the next Sunday. The Baptists had services. They did only two churches here, St. Paul and First Baptist, or Rock Hill, as the case may be. Other churches came a little later on. So we felt we had something we could go back to, both with the University Baptist Church, because we were with the University Baptist Church in 1865, right on the corner of Church Street. That's why that church is named Church Street. That's where the Baptist Church, black and white, were. And when they organized that church in 1854, as a result of Mount Carmel Baptist Church coming to the Chapel Hill, organizing the Baptist, 1854, they had 19 members of African descent. Well, so when the name came up about whether who should have the name, we said, well, we were in the original organization as well as they were. So nobody had taken the name. We took the name. And then somebody said, you stole our name. I said, we have a right for the name, too. We are part of the original group. And so we have First Baptist. When he got ready to change the name, I'll call the name.
Well, you know, in some communities, you'd have, you'd have a First Baptist church, which was known as the Black Church, and you'd have a First Baptist church that was named as the White Church, and everybody kind of accepted that they were the same name but two different organizations.
But
Chapel Hill, you got it.
Well, but not only that, but you see, it was difficult for the University Baptist Church to name themselves First Baptist in the 60s. They could have done that in the 40s or the 30s, but doing that in the 60s would have said, hey, you are leaving out Jesus Christ, and you're leaving out all your history, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When the guy called me up that morning, he said, John, I forget his name, he's gone. He said, you know, I think it's awful for you to steal our name. I said, Dr. So-and-so, if you think we've stolen your name, touch the record, because when I first came here, a man had the record of our church and their church in what they call Spencerian writing. It was very beautiful writing. And they had the record down there where we were there and would worship with the people at the same hour, although we'd be in the balcony, they'd be in the front. But we still baptized, and we still got put out. Had the record down there where people got drunk and put out, and when people had messed up in the family, and they put you out of church then. I mean, if you messed up at home, they put you out of church. You come back, but they put you out. If you got drunk, they put you out too. And well, White and Black was on the record down there with servant so-and-so.
Well, I don't want to. We're going to come back and talk some more about this some other time because we're out of town. But when you got started, we were talking about what you think is a very positive relationship with University Baptist
Church.
Just
nice family.
And what are y'all doing together, and how do you enrich this association?
Well, we have these worship services. The first thing we do, we recognize and respect the leadership. I respect the fact when we go to the University Baptist Church, Dr. Mitchell Simpson is the pastor in charge. When he comes to the First Baptist Church, he recognizes the fact that John Manley is the pastor in charge. See, that's the problem. With integration, there's nobody that's recognized as a leader from their own rights. We superimpose leadership on them. The problem was, for example, when the King got shot, much of the white community superimposed Andy Young upon the organization, but they had already elected Abernathy. That's really an affront to sort of select our leadership. So we respect it right out. We recognize you as a leader, you recognize me as a leader. And we work together, and now they congregate. Sometimes they come to our church on a visitation period, and sometimes we go there.
It's a great thing. I mean, I think one of the things that most white church-going people miss, well, first of all, we have to confess, we miss the fact that in most churches it's mostly segregated. But that, as a result, there's a richer and different experience in many African-American churches that white people miss. It's good to visit and to see the traditions of different people. You don't have to go there, but you can appreciate it.
No, but let me share with you one word. You use the word segregated. A lot of people do. I use the word separated.
Separated.
Now, the reason I do that for the black church is because whites have always been welcome.
It's true.
No, I know that's the truth. And you welcome, anyone who comes, we almost welcome you. Sort of.
You overcome, embrace you. Yeah,
that's exactly it's a good, right. You're here, so and so.
Well, we are at an end, and it's a good place to end because for people who are listening, that welcoming spirit, if you have never visited the First Baptist Church or St. Paul's or another church here in Chapel Hill, and you happen to be white, you don't have to worry about being welcome. You will
be
welcome, and you'll have an experience that you'll wonder why you haven't. And it'll enrich the experience of you back at your own church.
Yeah,
it's a great thing to do.
Well, we appreciate that.
Well, it was welcome, and it was wonderful to welcome you.
It's a pleasure.
And Dr. J.R. Manley, the pastor of the First Baptist Church, has been my guest, and what a great treat to have this time with him. I hope he'll accept an invitation to come back real soon, and we'll finish this conversation. Thanks all y'all for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.
Thank you.
Remembering the Reverend J.R. Manley, who died on Sunday, December 11th, WCHL is rebroadcasting his Who's Talking interview recorded in July of 2008.